Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You show, and I am your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. My co-host, Katie Eastman, is on her way to Portland, Oregon today, so we are going to be flying solo today with our guest. I am so proud to have you with us. You are the author of the lovely book, Dare to Change Your Job and Your Life, and your name is Carol Kent.
Dr. Carol.
I wanted to get your last name right. Cancher, yeah. I'm from the Midwest, so I want to pronounce it all fancy, like Cancher. But thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Elizabeth.
Yeah,
I say good morning or good afternoon to our listeners or participants, whomever they might be.
Yeah. Where are you calling me from? What part of the country?
I'm calling you from Calgary, Alberta, which is in the Midwest. It's the heart of the oil industry in North America, 30 minutes away from Banff, Lake Louise, where we have favorite skiing and resorts area, beautiful mountainous area.
Beautiful. Well, I received a copy of your book, and I was wondering if you would kindly, you know, I don't know if you have other things that you would like to talk about, but I would really love to just focus on your book for an entire hour. Is that too much to ask of you,
no,
or do you have other things?
Elizabeth. Anybody has any questions, or you have any questions? That's great. I would certainly talk about how I got started and why I wrote the book, because it is all related to the topic of what we are talking about, Dare to Change. I wrote the book based on my PhD research. I was interested in learning what was the matter with me. Why did I change a job voluntarily that I was doing well at? Why did I have to move on? So I took a look at two different groups of people who voluntarily take charge of their lives and those who don't. Now, my initial question was, is a career cycle tied in with the life cycle? So I wanted to understand about me and other people and how we differed. So I just want to share my research, because this is the fifth edition of my book, which has won the American Association for Career Education Book Award for Excellence and Innovation. So,
yeah.
And I wrote it to this fifth edition because I felt that a lot of people are not yet looking at career in new ways. Now, some of your participants probably do because they're tapped in to your show, but many of us are still in the old model, and we can talk about that too. But this is why I wrote the book, to share my ideas.
Yeah, you have
One of the things. Sorry.
I was going to give people a little bit about your background. You're a registered psychologist, educator, awesome author, columnist. You've been at this for years. This is over 25 years of working with people. And you've done lectures at the University of California, Berkeley, Santa Cruz, University of Alberta. And it's really neat to have you with us. And I'm so glad that we get to talk to you for a whole hour about this book, because this book came into our house and it's changing lives. And my husband's an attorney, and I'm I own Best Ever You, but it's definitely changing lives. And I wondered if we could, right off the bat, you talk about Quester, and people might not know what that means. It says, would you know a Quester if you ever met one? Are you a Quester? Could you become one? And what is a Quester anyway? What is a Quester?
Well, questers, I call them, could be called other things in other literature, such as creative individuals, self-actualizing people, people who will succeed in the new world, or people who are going to live long, healthy, happy lives. Questers take charge of their lives. They generally have a sense of purpose. They follow their purpose with everything they do. They feel comfortable doing what's right for them. They're optimistic. They like challenge growth. They're confident at high standards. They're authentic, and they periodically reevaluate who they are and where they're going. Now, the interesting thing is we are all born questers. When you take a look at little babies, and I'm sure you're familiar with how they... they are questers. They experiment. They are growing. They try to walk. They fall. They pick themselves up again and try again. They explore into cupboards and other things as toddlers. We are naturally born to grow and change. And what happens to us as we get older? Because not many adults still have those behaviors. Questers do. So what I'm, asking is, it's important that you understand this is normal. This is a normal pattern of behavior, is change and growth and curiosity and continuous learning. And being yourself. Who are you?
How do
what
you
is your purpose?
Exactly. Who are you and what is your purpose? How do you distinguish between somebody who is a quester and somebody who just is going from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing and nothing's working out?
Well, that's a real good question. Let me just say, the people I call conventional types or traditionalists, nobody is a true quester, nobody is a true traditionalist. They have a little bit of all these qualities, right? But then you say, how can you distinguish a quester from a job hopper? Well, the interesting thing is many people in their 20s, do a lot of job hopping because they are trying to understand themselves and see where they fit. This is particularly true of those in their early 20s. These people in their late teens, early 20s are going to what I would refer to as an identity crisis, in which they are deciding what the next 5-10 years will bring for them. Will it be work? Will it be school? If it's school, what is it? They're also choosing values and partners and experimenting with drugs and sex and experimenting with jobs. Sometimes we can facilitate the process of learning and decision-making by counseling and by parents, teachers, schools. Some educational programs do have a career decision making. Others don't. Some are good and some are not. But this is normal. And then some people in their early 20s just try. So those are those job hoppers are really looking for who they are and what the fit is.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No. Yeah. Absolutely. What rings true there also, though, is this period of time that so many women have after we have our children and perhaps maybe we've been home for a while and out of the workforce. It feels like a lot of my friends are going through that right now. Like, okay, the kids are all in school. Now what do I do? Well, I haven't been a banker for 12 years. I've been at home raising kids for 12 years, and it seems like we kind of go through this process again of, okay, what am I going to do? Like, a lot of my friends are going back to school. One in particular is going back to school to be a nurse. Can you talk about that maybe a little bit? Absolutely.
But before I do, I just want to talk about, we talked about the identity crisis, late teens, early 20s. But mm-hmm. as we go through life, both men and women, we go through alternating developmental and transition periods. So our first, you know, a transition is the early 20s. Then when we get to be in the late 20s, early 30s, both men and women, we can talk specifically about women in a few minutes, but I just want to show the pattern, through another questioning, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And all these questioning periods related to career are related to family, to relationships, to religion, to illness, to job loss, to have a baby, to get, you know, whatever the case is. Late 20s, early 30s, this is a very important transition for women and men, because I've done this research going through history, and, you know, it's universal. It's a universal pattern. It happens in North America, but it also happens in other parts of the world and way back in history. Now, Jesus mm-hmm. was age 30 when he was baptized in the River Jordan. Prince Siddhartha was in his late 20s when he went for his search. He was the first Buddha. He came back in his early 30s. And so we see this pattern. Many women, if they've gotten married early, may be deciding here to go back to school. If they haven't had any kids, maybe they decide with their partner they're going to have kids. And so there is this decision point. Then a decision is made, and we proceed to the developmental 30s. However, late 30s, early 40s, we go through another transition, another questioning in which we are reassessing. What do I want to do? Who am I for the next 5 to 10 years? And so we question again, sometimes a job loss, sometimes a separation, sometimes the illness of a parent, sometimes a move. Everything is interrelated, and they precipitate these self-evaluations. And then we go through another transition. We go through developmental period at age 40. We go through another developmental transition period, age 50. And yep. So this continues throughout life. Now, what age group, what transition would the women that you're talking about?
We're in the 40s. Yeah, like I'm 40, 41 with four boys, ages 9, 11, 13, and 15. And mm-hmm. like my particular circumstance, I used to work for a pretty big corporation in Minneapolis, and I had two children at the time, got divorced, got remarried, had two more children, and was just so outnumbered I just stopped working. And we moved across the country, and you know, I've kept my foot in the door doing different things, and then about 3 years ago I started Best Ever You. And it's just kept going and going and going and going and going. Is it the most financially successful thing I've ever done? No. Is it the most fulfilling thing I've ever done? Yes. It's very cool to be able to talk to people like you on the radio and do the magazine and the website and so forth. But, you know, there are a lot of us women around looking to figure out what it is that we're going to do now.
Yeah. So were you, when you got your divorce and so forth, were you in the age 30 transition?
Yeah, I was. I was right at about the age 30 group, 29 actually, got a divorce, moved from mm-hmm. Minnesota to California, and then got remarried mm-hmm. and had two more boys. And then we moved about almost six and a half years ago now from California to Maine for my husband's mm-hmm. job. And so we've been all over the place, but... you're having a lot of fun, but I love this book because it you know, it's it's Do You Dare Change Your Job and Your Life? What are you going to do? And I like it because it kind of fills in the gaps where you sort of have a hunch that's what's happening to you, but this sort of validates it in a way. It says, yeah, you know, you're not going nuts. At about age 40, you're going to question everything, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say just you're going through another sort of transition. The average, you know, everybody has their own cycle. You've been through a lot, so you've got your patterns. The average transition, it happens every 5 to 10 years. The interesting thing is 7.5 is the average. You know, every 5 to 10 years, a developmental period, you know, about 7.5 years, if that makes sense. So we are part of the universal system in which everything is interrelated. The important thing is to understand that and pay attention to yourself and to be true to yourself.
To know
who you are.
I love to do this with guests on our show. I love to just randomly open the book to a page and see what I land on. And I did this and I landed on page 126, which is Tips for Enhancing the Courage to Risk. And I'm curious, it's interesting, this page, because whenever anybody is reevaluating or thinking about making a change or a job change or, you know, even just the slightest notion of thinking about it, sometimes people just stop right there and they say, oh, I can't do that, it's too scary or whatever. What do you think about, can you elaborate maybe a little bit on if you feel like that's a risk or taking a risk or people who are...
Yeah, well, there's a lot to that question, Elizabeth. First of all, it's easier to risk if you really love what it is you are going to risk for, if you really want it. But I would say that we have all risked. So I would say, why don't we look at three successful risks we've taken? You know, for example, you, Katie, you've made a lot of changes. What would be one of the changes that you felt you risked?
Me? Personally, for me, I think the biggest risk I ever have taken in my life is leaving my family, which my parents and my siblings and so forth in Minnesota, and moving to California with my new husband. That was just love. And it was so, you know, it's the neatest move I've ever made in my life, and everything about my life from taking that risk, and believe me, that was scary stuff. To say, okay, I'm going to leave my parents. I mean, I'm not a person who lists everything out and does positives and negatives and things like that. I'm more of a, if I get a negative vibe, if I get a real negative vibe, I won't do something. But I didn't have any negative vibes. And that's how I took that risk.
So what made that risk successful? No negative vibes for one.
Yeah.
So you kind of listen to your intuition, right?
I'm a person who I've learned as I've gotten older to really do the gut check. If my head or gut says no, then I generally really listen to that. I think it's when you ignore those things that you get into trouble.
That's just me.
I don't know if that's right or wrong.
I would say it works for almost most people. Okay, now what else made that successful?
I know what didn't make it successful. I can probably define it a little bit more in that. What didn't make it successful was, it was successful, but what gave it a little wrench here and there was my family back home not supporting me in the way I needed them to. Nobody said, go for it. What a great thing for you. Go for it, go for it, go for it. So I had to sort of overcome that. But other than that, what made it successful was just, it's hard to go back a little bit and think about that, just the overall happiness of it. I don't know. It was just a really happy move. It was great.
Okay, it was something different for you. You felt good because you accomplished something, right?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you did it. You did it. You accomplished it. And so, therefore, other people do get in the way of us making a decision. You know, it could be parents. It could be friends. It could be it's our social system. You know, we like things comfortable. And your parents are really thinking what they perceived to be best for you, but it wasn't best for you because this move helped you grow. It made you strengthen confidence. You sort of learn that you can learn and you can risk again, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
That is. Yeah. Well, one of the other things is, before you take the risk. Now, did you know what it is that you were getting into in California? Did you have a place to stay? Did you have a job? Did your new husband have a job? Did you visit California to find out what it is wanted to do once you got there?
Yeah, I don't know if I had a great game plan for what it was I wanted to do once I got there, but I did visit a few times before I made the move, and I moved into his apartment in San Francisco, and then from there, once we got situated with the kids and so forth, we rented a house, and then we bought a house, and then we did those kinds of things. But we kind of had a game plan for what it is we were going to do, to some extent. Both of us are kind of we're fairly good with risk, and we're fairly good with change for the most part. You know, as long as they don't, you know, like 10 things don't happen at once or something, then it's way too much. But I wonder if do people spend a lot of time, you know, when you talk to people, do they spend time afraid to take risks? Is it not knowing how to take the risk? Is there a way to take a risk?
Yeah, I suppose.
Or know what?
Yeah, it's they are afraid for and that's the biggest fear. Sometimes it's guilt too, but they tend to be afraid because they might lose a secure income, they might lose friends, they may not have enough money. They're afraid to take the step. But the interesting thing is what we need to do is, okay, what am I afraid of? Is it lack of a secure income? Well, you know, how could I overcome this? Can I borrow money? Can I take this risk on a part-time basis? What are the ways I can overcome this money business? I have a lower standard of living for a time while I want to go to school or whatever, you know, depending what the risk is. There's always barriers in the way, if we want to call them that. But there's always ways, creative ways, of addressing these. Now, sometimes risk involves trade-offs, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you have to decide, and that's why it is a risk. But, you know, the interesting thing is there's always a trade-off when we make a change and when we risk. But if you are risking for something you enjoy doing, then it's not as risky, or it doesn't feel as risky. Now, also, I want to mention about risking is in the eyes of the beholder. Sometimes we perceive it to be a lot worse, and sometimes it's because our friends tell us that or we read things. But it's really not as bad as it seems, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some risks.
Yeah.
Some people enjoy physical risks like skydiving. Some people would consider cosmetic surgery a risk, and others wouldn't.
Yeah.
Some people think divorce is a risk. Yes, it is. And some people don't. Some people find giving a presentation risky. Yes, you have to prepare, and you have to know what it is you're talking about, and you have to be interested in the subject you're talking about so you can do a good job. And then you have to give, and most of us, when you listen to interviews of actors and actresses or performers, many of them still are apprehensive before they get on the stage. So that's
yeah.
kind of, you know, a normal reaction to something different, and so forth. So we need to look at how we perceive risk, and we need to consider ourselves. That's why I gave you the exercise as risk takers. You know, so it might be helpful to, as I indicated and you did, look at a successful risk. If we had time, we'd look at other successful risks. But and then what did you learn about yourself? One of the things you want to do is also, you know, learn to be more flexible in your day-to-day living. So what about making small changes? Certainly, yeah. You can try a different hairstyle, drive to work differently.
I'm
those
laughing.
Are all. Yeah.
I just tried a different hairstyle and it didn't work. We just
didn't
have
work.
Really fun. No. We risked it, but it didn't work. I just took.
Well,
I have really blonde hair. Yeah, and we
yeah.
dipped the
yeah.
entire
so
underneath part of. Yeah. We had to go back and fix, but you know, there it's. I think it's very interesting when you, and we'll move on off of risk here a little bit because I've got an overall point that I wanted to see if we could come back to. But, you know, almost everything in life is a risk. I mean, when you walk out your
right.
front door, you're taking a risk of sorts.
Right.
And
right.
It just seems to be, is there like a tolerance level or something, is there a way to judge whether a risk is okay to take or not? There's a loaded question.
Well, you don't know sometimes until you've done it, but there's a way to plan for risk, and that's why I asked you when you went to California, what did you do? You know, I mean, you've got to do your research. Now, if it's doing a haircut or to change of hairstyle, well, it is risky to do that, but if you want to make a change, then that's fine. And ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen, okay? The worst
yep.
thing that could happen is you didn't like the haircut, right?
Yep.
In that risk. However, if it's a bigger risk, you have to ask yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen? And if the worst thing that could happen is something you can't yet face or are not yet ready for, then maybe you shouldn't take the risk. And so again,
so glad you
it's kind
that.
Of like, yeah, it's your gut that you were telling us about, right?
Yeah, you just put it into words because we say that a lot in our house when we need to make a change or do something, or you know, there's a lot that comes. You know, we've been married for 12 years, and there've been a lot of things that we've encountered, and we say that we'll look at something and go, okay, if we do this, what's the worst thing that can happen? And that's something that we actually say. It's interesting that you just said that. We'll look at each other and go, what's the worst thing that can happen? And we'll figure out what that is. And we'll make a decision. Nope, we're not going to do that. Or, yeah, that's okay. If that happens, fine. Then so be it. And that's a very interesting way to look at risk. I wanted to go back. I opened this up to Chapter 3, and it says, are you a quester? Would you like to become one? We're all born with quester qualities. And you talk about babies and young children and so forth. But as you grow, you write here that as you grow older, you lose this sometimes, or you forget the good feelings that come from accomplishing difficult tasks and so forth. And There's quite a questionnaire in here to kind of, decide whether you're a quester or not. My question is, if you take this, for example, and decide, well, no, you're not, does everybody have quester tendencies?
Well, everybody has some, let's talk just a little bit about the traditionalists, too, because questers value internal rewards more than external. Internal rewards include such things as growth, creativity, challenge, less than money, status, and prestige. That doesn't mean to say that they don't like money and security, right? But that means that it's more important to them to continue to grow and learn. So, and we all have, and so questers have, they do, like some security. They do like what money can buy. But when it's coming to a big decision, like leaving a job or getting a divorce or whatever it might be, which are big decisions, then you have to look at, what's more important to me, and the questers will take that. We all have a little bit of the quester and traditional qualities, but it's kind of like more rather than less, if that makes sense. So we all have purpose, but some of us don't know what that purpose is. We all have confidence, but sometimes it goes down because of other things that are happening to us. We all have positive in some ways, but sometimes we're negative. We all have risks in some ways, but sometimes we risk more than others, and it's easier. It's easier once you take a risk to do other risks. And I kind of, you used to use the example, at least to women, it's kind of like, when's the first time you had sex? That was a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes less of a risk, right?
Yep.
It's getting into the idea that you can do something, that you can go back to school. You can succeed if that's what you want. If you haven't ever been to school and you take one course, you try it out.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're an expert in self-confidence.
Well,
seem like you are.
you won't want to talk about that?
Yeah, I have a feeling you know all about it. I can see that you've written some things in here, but I think beyond these pages, you get it and what women go through. And we have a lot of people that turn to Best Ever You regarding self-confidence and self-esteem, and we're just sort of starting to tackle that. So maybe you can kind of help us a little bit. What are some things women very often don't, on a daily basis, maybe moment by moment, feel good about themselves for whatever reason it might be? What do you think are things that women or men too, more men suffer from self-confidence too, issues than they care to admit. But what are tips that people can do to increase their self-esteem and self-confidence?
Well, I think they need to find some supportive friends and partners and keep away from people that are naysayers or give them doubt about themselves. It's very important to focus on the positive aspects of who you are. So one of the things you can do, for example, is make a list of your accomplishments. Now, whether it happens to be work or family or volunteer activities, whatever, include those all in your list that you're very proud of. And you can see the things that you have done. You've accomplished things. So, and these include personal qualities. You're caring. You are trusting. You are accepting. You are always on time, whatever, you're reliable. These are good qualities. Let's realize that we have these things. Then I would also suggest focus on the positive. What do you want? What do you want to learn about and believe that you can get it? Do not ever use the word, I can't. If you say, now, we're using you as an example, Elizabeth, you or someone that you know, when did you think of, or have you recently thought of something negative?
Oh, this morning, let's just say.
What did you think?
What did I think about? That I needed to lose weight.
Okay.
Just ugh. Go ahead.
Sorry. Need to lose weight. Okay, but losing weight or needing to is not so negative. You just thought it was negative.
So oh, yeah.
Can you turn it around and say, it's a matter of us learning to restructure the negative thoughts into positive ones. See, there's a lot of...
Yeah, I would love to teach women how to do this.
Yeah. Can I spend just a few minutes describing energy? Because that's all part of it.
Please.
You know, Einstein's equation E equals mc squared.
Mm-hmm.
So what that says is really everything in the universe is energy. It just appears different because it vibrates at a different speed. So your phone is energy. My book is energy. The computer's energy. Your hair is energy. My glasses are energy, etc. They just
mm-hmm.
appear different because they vibrate differently. Now, interesting thing, so are our thoughts. Positive thoughts create one kind of energy, and negative thoughts create another kind of energy. So when we think positive, we are getting positive. When we say something worrisome or negative, we are going to get something negative or worrisome. So likes attract. Now, the thing is, this happens with our feelings about ourselves. When we say, I can't do this, or I'm fat, that is what we are doing. So there's a lot more to this, but basically our thoughts create what happens to us because they are picked up by our subconscious, and our subconscious sends this energy out to the environment, to other people, and to yourself. So the idea is change your thoughts. If you say something negative, like I'm fat, okay, if you perceive that to be negative, then what could you say to make it sound better and more accepting to your subconscious?
Oh, you want my laundry list of
okay, I will,
things
I
say.
I am losing weight.
I say I go to the gym every day. I always say I'm a work in progress.
Okay, I am a work in progress. Yep, that's fine. That sounds better than
I'm fat,
right?
Yeah.
And so when you say I'm a work in progress, then your subconscious is picking it up and you're moving forward. Now, I had it happens in for everything. Now, I had a client, for example, who had migraine headaches. And we talked about this, and she was going to practice saying that her head feels better. But she came back a couple of weeks later, and I said, how are you feeling? She says, terrible. I have my migraine headaches. I said, what were you saying to yourself? And she said, I no longer have migraine headaches. Mm-hmm. So she was using migraine headaches and saying
right.
she no longer had them. And so what that was doing, your sort of subconscious was picking up migraine headaches.
Yeah.
And when she changed and said, my head feels better, then my head
and no
feels
mention
better.
Of migraine headaches, yeah.
Yeah. I would get, related to this client, I had a client who was a PhD pharmacist, and he came in to see me, and he said, I'm depressed. I've been depressed all my life, and I'm off work for depression and medication. So, you know, that's a pretty sad state. And he was 40. And, it, I mean, these are women and men, but I'm just using
yeah, whatever,
him
yeah,
as an example.
Get it.
I explained this to him. We talked about it a little more. And he started to laugh. And anyway, he had some of this to rehearse practice, and he came back a week later. Well, within 3 weeks, he was back at work feeling good. So it's very important to focus on the positive and to use positive terms to for yourself, to believe in yourself. This is very, very important. Like we often get told, well, by parents, by teachers, by classmates, by people in the neighborhood. You know, we get signals from them that may be negative, and we are picking up that. Well, we need to change. You know, if you're picking up that negativity from whatever it is and you want to stay away from people or protect yourself from getting those kind of vibes by, you know, developing support systems of positive people. So
right.
that is something else. But another thing is don't compare yourself with anybody else. You are unique. You've got your positive qualities, the list you've made. You are accepting yourself. So you are a good person. You're wanting to learn and grow. You have a lot to contribute. Know what these are. Know what you want to learn about. Take a class. Listen to whatever it is you want to listen to or read. Judge. Don't compare yourself with others.
That's a big one. That's a tough one
yourself.
To learn, too.
Yeah, yeah. Compare yourself against yourself. Judge your accomplishments against personal standards. You're doing better. You are doing better today than you did yesterday. Tomorrow you're going to do it even better. Or you try it first time. It doesn't work. Well, you'll try it until it does work. When it does, look at how many times Einstein, or how many years it took him to understand his equation. It took Edison many, many tries before he got the light bulb. So don't be hard on yourself. If you want something, you have to practice, and you are the judge of you. Now, sometimes we can be overly critical of ourselves. We don't. We're just learning to be better. That's a normal part of learning. Is falling, failing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Einstein said, you know, if we don't learn or try, how are we ever know if we can do anything?
Yeah, and speaking of knowing whether you can do anything or not, you know, and you know, having a failure or persevering through something, I was wondering if we could shift just a little bit and talk about resilience. And maybe, you know, I know part of it's all tied together, you know, self, I think it's written, you know, part of self-confidence and dealing, you know, with low self-esteem or low self-confidence also isn't how you cope and deal with situations. And some people seem to give up. It's amazing. There's a saying going around Facebook even right now that says, you know, some people who give up might never know how close they were to the actual success or something like that. But how do you mm-hmm. give some tips for maybe, you know, resilience and you know, getting through sticky situations?
Well, that's good. You know, like what you said, they're all interrelated. Now, what we talked about, risk is also related to resilience. So, you know, realize that you are resilient because you have made. Now, let's just take a traumatic experience or stressful experience that you have had. And do you want to share, since you are the one that, you know, sharing, what did you a stressful experience? Now, you talked about your move. Now, there was a stressful experience, a traumatic that you've had.
I haven't had, you know, I'm one of those people, I haven't had very much trauma in my life or anything
mm-hmm.
really,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, good for me so far. I haven't had too much of that. My brother, on the other hand, we adopted my brother at birth, and he has fetal alcohol syndrome. And if you Google Justin Hamilton in Minneapolis, you know, on the internet, you'll find that four people, you know, he's disabled. They hurt him really bad. They've all been prosecuted and so forth. And to make a long story short, you know, he's still standing. You know, he's 6'5", and he's got some. You know, he's blind in one eye from what they did, and he's got some scars and things for what these people did to him. But, you know, when I think of somebody who's had something traumatic happen to him, not only his birth, but now what's happened to him, you know, at an older age, the fact that, you know, when I just visited Minnesota, you know, he walked right in the door and gave me a big hug, that's resilience to me.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you suppose made him resilient?
You know, he's just got an amazing positive quality to him. He's a really positive person. Yeah.
That we accept little things and move on, because this realize that change and growth are just a normal part of life.
Yeah.
And so the weather changes. It certainly changes here very dramatically where I live, because it's mountain weather. Mm-hmm. And it might be, 70 degrees above at 1 o'clock, and then at 3 o'clock, if you don't dress warm enough, you've got wind and it's cold. So that's part of being resilient, right? Changing.
Yeah, it could even be just
for
as
the weather.
Simple, yeah, as the weather. that's a good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, be prepared for change, because that's the kind of world we're living in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, as I indicated, a big, you know, what you have been resilient. Your brother has been resilient. I've done a lot, so I've been resilient. But I've had clients who they find that, for example, I mean, it this is the big resilience. If you get laid off, then this is stress. This is trauma. If you get a divorce.
Yep, I've been divorced.
That you didn't want. This is trauma.
Yeah.
And if it's a big trauma, okay, this is challenging. So you have to deal with your feelings. You have to deal with your thoughts. You've got to give it time. You've got to let the feelings out. And then, of course, there's a time to... realize that you are a strong person and have things to offer, and what are they? And then we move forward. So let's just use divorce, because we've both been through it. I had to make the decision myself. I was married to a politician, a lawyer politician, and it looked good. And but it, you know, I want to get into the negativity. It looked a lot better than it was, and it was making me sick. So I had to make the decision. Anyway, that you know, it was big. There were a lot of stress there, and even the stress of changing my name, because I was the head of a guidance department in the school, and I was known in the community. His name, and small thing. I said to the principal of the school, I don't want to use that name. I want to go by my maiden name. And he says, well, why don't you write the teachers a letter and say, in the future, please address me as Carol Kampscher. And so I did. And I worried about it. And, you know, it was a piece of cake. Nobody ever made a mistake. Nobody ever said anything about it. And the kids that were in grade 12 the previous year came to school and say, hi, we like your new name. So, you know, I worried and worried. It's not so bad. So a lot of that is in the eyes of the older
people. Chime in right there. That is such a, when I got divorced, I can't tell you how many hours I spent agonizing over, should I go back to Hamilton or do I keep it McClaney? Or because I had two children with the last name McClaney, and I felt like if I didn't have their last name, no one would think I was their mom, and da da da. The endless self-talk. Oh my gosh! Even to this day, it's a very funky feeling. Because there's two kids in the house that aren't a Hamilton or a Garino, they're McClaney. And, you know, there's just nothing you can do about it. It just is what it is, but I'm not going to go by that last name anymore. And so, I relate to that a lot. And I bet a lot of people, I bet you just touched on a button that a lot of people have to go through, just that one simple, tiny little thing.
And that's, you know, okay, you can't, you know, you have to say, what? I can't, you know, this. You make the decision, you do it or not, you know, what you need to do. And I have a friend who says, and, you know, a lot of it is things that we can change, we have control over. Or if it's something that we don't, well, we go on and move. I give you, and she says, I just, you know, blow it off with a piece of fluff. She's got to do that. But I just want to share an example of a big trauma I had, which was not divorce, but it was losing my computer data twice. Now, the first time I took my computer in, I brought it back, all the data was gone. It was somehow destroyed by the person that was fixing it. Well, I got all angry, upset. Well, I was spending a lot of time getting angry and upset and trying to do something about it. Well, then I went to meditate, and I said to myself, well, this isn't getting me anywhere. I have to move forward because this negative energy is harming my development in other areas of my life. I can't move forward. And so once I decided that, I was moving forward. So we have to be careful with some things we can't control. But we accept it. We do what we can. I did what I could to get my data, and, you know, it's still in process. But that's the way it is, that, you know, you do what you can, and then you move forward and realize. Now, aren't you glad you got that first divorce?
Yes.
Okay, so usually we come out of it, that's what we're going to say, better, stronger, wiser.
Had you asked me that
usually
8 years ago, I might not have said that, or ten,
right?
You know what I mean?
It
takes a while, but yes.
Yeah. The women who who go through divorces, and I'm sure a good part of this audience, half of them, might have experienced or are experienced. Well, there is this transition phase. But then on the other end of it, you are stronger and wiser. And that's why I wanted, you know, to have them look, audience, look at traumatic experiences. You know, what were they and how have they made you? And if you were to make another marriage or whatever the case may be, what would you do differently? You know, what did you ignore first time around or didn't know of that you now know and would look for so that this doesn't happen again?
Yeah. No, it's great advice. And you know what else? I picked up on something that you said, and you said, because it was making me sick. And, you know, one of the reasons why you got divorced in the first place. And I think I'd love it when, and I'm learning this, I did not know this until probably 4 years ago or so, but there are things that happen to you physically. And might not be like, you know, you really are allergic or you really have the flu or you really have this, but if it's recurring and so forth, really looking at your life and what could be causing that type of stress. You're going to put it much more eloquently than I am, I'm sure, but could you elaborate on that just a little bit about paying attention
to? Yeah,
well,
it's just the incongruence between who you are and what is happening to you. Now, when I, I came up with the strangest illnesses when I was married to this person. I would have little pimples that would come under my eyes. I had a sore back, a sore knee. And I didn't realize they were all caused by the stress created by the marriage. So any kind of incongruence between who you are and what you're doing, whether it's work or whether it's a relationship or where you're living, if that is creating some kind of stress, or incongruence between who you are and what you're doing or the situation, then you need to get rid of it because it's that stress that creates illness.
Yeah.
Physical
absolutely.
And psychological. And it is manifested in so many different ways. I gave you some examples of mine with my ex-husband. I see people who are laid off from their jobs, and I know one woman who was laid off. Her skin didn't only break out in a rash, it was peeling off.
Yeah, and that stress does that kind of stuff to you for sure. I mean, there is just all sorts of stuff that happens. And we have 2 minutes left. Can you believe it? We've been on here for an hour. And I wanted to ask you, we have 1 minute left now. I wanted to beg you to come back on our show again, please, because it has just been a joy talking to you. And I think you're the type of guest where people really learn from what you have to say and what you have, you know, what you're thinking. And I hope that you'll join us again. And I wanted to have you tell us your website, please.
Yeah, it's www.daretochange.com.
Good.
So
okay.
daretochange.com.
And people can buy your book, Dare to Change Your Life. Dare to Change Your Job and Your Life, and it's in its fifth edition. A very great book. We covered just a few pages of the 415 or so, 420 pages, and I just I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth, for inviting me, and yes, I would love to come back and chat and share some additional things. It might be helpful if some of the guests would have some questions they might want.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get those going for the next time for sure. So thank you so much for joining us. And everyone can visit besteveryou.com and besteverecommunity.com. And we'll be posting more about Carol and her book following the show, as well as a link to listen to the show again if you'd like to. All right, so thank you so much, And I hope you have a great day, Carol. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. Bye.